then you take for them.
Honorable Cinder.
Thank you, Chair. I nominate Faith Began to chair the meeting.
Honorable Faith Began is nominated. Can I have a second for the nomination?
My name is Lindo Mjobo. I second the name of Comrade of Faith Began.
Any objections to the nomination of Honorable Faith Begani? No objection. Honorable Faith Begani, can you come and take your seat? Thank you.
Good morning, members. Without any waste of time, I think, can we start by a round of introductions so that you know who all is present in here? And then from there, we'll have first Pat Raman presenting their document to us. We'll have to find a way of negotiating with Moneyline, because the 80 pages is going to keep us there until 6 o'clock tonight, I should think. But we'll find a way of guiding you in terms of how best can we present to each other. And hopefully DMR is present. Ribo, you are here. Just so that we can have concurring information in terms of what progress has been made since the last time we had our visits at KZN and the Free State. And the two mines are the two mines that we had problems with. So we'd really like to know what DMR is saying presently and if relations have changed since the last time we spoke to each other. Can we then start with a round of introductions? My name is Faith Begani, representing the African National Congress.
I'm Bulela Tinto from the ANC.
My name is Rose Sondo, I'm a member of the committee.
James Lorimer, representing the Democratic Alliance.
My name is Lindy Wantrobo, member of the committee.
Dikwamo Azapu.
Nolotando Mukoni, representing Moneyline and Pamin Mining.
Freddy Makafula, representing Bamin and Moneyline.
Good morning. My name is Bongani Dinga, representing the SLV KZN. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Thobone Nkambule from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Wisa Mami from the I'm the PLO.
Good morning. My name is Khalifa Kelty. I'm representing the Department of Mineral Resources, Free State Region.
Good morning. My name is Jolim Bata. I'm the head of the State Minister. Jolim Bata, representing Bamin and Moneyline.
Sorry.
Good morning. My name is Freddy Kenny. I'm the director of Pietra and also director of Robex.
My name is Chester Woolridge. I'm the director of Agri Quarry and general manager of Romex Aggregates.
Morning, Robert Shedlock, director Petra Quarry and divisional director for the aggregates division of Robex.
Can we get the introduction to the back, please?
Good morning,
For the sake of recordings, can you please make yourself the mic?
Good morning, I'm Kathy Groshme. I'm with the Deputy Minister's Office.
Good morning, my name is Luvuyo Waisha from PMG.
Good morning, I'm Martin Nicol. I'm the researcher for the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Chris Hillian, Moneyline, Bomb and Mining.
Adnan Albertus, SARS.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can we go to Oh, sorry, are there any apologies?
We've got apologies from the chairperson, Honorable Gona, Honorable Kwang, and Honorable Ngele. Thank you.
Okay, can we go straight to Petra? And just your side of the story first.
Okay, thank you, Chair. What I've done is I've prepared a presentation which would pretty much follow the format of the mining charter as the aid memoir from the DMR on the mining charter and also the spreadsheet on reporting on the mining charter. And what I've tried to do is actually follow that format so we have that framework in place so that everyone is actually understanding exactly that we're proceeding through that mining charter element by element. First of all, I'd just like to understand that Petra Quarry is about the people. Our business is about people. And what I have here is just a photograph of some of our important people at Petra Quarry. The guy in the middle with a green jacket on is Peter Tuta, who's our quarry manager. On the left-hand side is Ephraim Laporta, one of our senior supervisors. And on the right-hand side are two mechanical engineering students doing their practical from the Central University of Technology, Ntaka Kharetsi and Riala Boha Lekhwane. They are respectively 25 and 22 years old, doing their practical part of their training at Petra Quarry with all the machinery. The next part of the mining charter is regarding ownership. And what I'm going to do for this part is hand over to my esteemed colleague Robert Shedlock just to explain how the ownership of Petra Quarry is set up.
Thank you. Petra Quarry is an entity in which we hold the mining license on the property. 100% of Petra Quarry is owned by a company called Inzala Crushing and Aggregates, Pty Limited. Inzala Crushing and Aggregates is owned 74% by Romex Aggregates, which in turn is held by Romex Group, and 26% of that is owned by two development trusts that we have recently put in place, currently represented by Vishal Chagan, who was the owner of the 26% of Inzala Crushing and Aggregates. That's just a diagrammatical schematic of the percentages to make it easier to understand. What we've got is Inzala Crushing, which is the empowered company, owns all our quarry companies which have their mining licenses in each of the respective regions. Just for the committee, we've actually represented here the share certificate so that there's no confusion as to the actual ownership, because that appeared to be a problem in the past. This is the share certificate that's actually in Vishal Chagan's name. Unfortunately, we are awaiting the master's consent in having the two trusts registered. We have got authority from various legal counsel to say that the development trust and the employee trust are in the benefits of the underlying individuals and for the benefit of the social development. However, until such time as the trust is fully registered by the master, the shares are held on behalf of those trusts by Vishal. This is just the front page of the employee trust, just so that the committee can see that it's just not hearsay lip service. It has in fact been set forward at the master's office. And then the other trust is the Education and Development Trust, also as has been set forward to the master's office. Together these two trusts will hold the 26%. What we've done is we've made sure that all the income that goes to the trust is a dividend flow. The dividend flow flows directly through to the trusts, and the trust must within 90 days dispose of that dividend flow of cash for the representative beneficiaries. It's a very simple structure. It's something that I think a lot of the mining companies have tried to make appropriate so that it is broad-based and not necessarily for one individual. We feel that in the past the benefits that some of the empowerment companies have put in place was for a single or a group of individual people, and we believe that a more broad-based through the employees and through into the social development side of each of the regions is more appropriate.
Just at this juncture, are there any questions regarding ownership of this stage?
Can just make your own presentation.
Okay, sure.
What the members normally do, they'll compile their question and then you handle them. You mostly want to tackle them as a team.
Okay.
You tackle them afterwards.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, moving on through the presentation, the directors of Petroquarry as we stand at the moment are Una Adonis, an HDSA person, she actually lives in Cape Town, Freddie Kenny, the gentleman sitting on my right-hand side, Robert Shedlock, the gentleman sitting on my left-hand side, Toby Visser, who is not present today, and myself. Moving on, I'm going to move on to procurement, the next category of the mining charter reporting structure. What I have is the target for 2012 is 20% to be spent with BEE entities. The total capital spend in our last financial year was only 209,000. I stress at this point in time that that is not our normal spend. Our capital spend at Petroquarry and our other quarries varies substantially from year to year, and can be as much as 5 million rand, it can be as little as 200,000 rand. The non-discretionary spend was zero. The discretionary spend, 209, and we spent that entire amount with a BEE entity. According to the mining charter, the definition of a BEE entity is an entity which holds more than 26%, which is 26% empowered. So our spend with the BEE entity was 100% in the capital category. Procurement of services, the target for 2012 is 50% to be spent with BEE entities. Our total service spend was near enough to 6.7 million rand. Non-discretionary service spend was a total of 2.8, and that was predominantly our account with the Mangaung municipality, which for water and electricity. There are a few little bits and pieces, but that's predominantly what it is. The discretionary spend was near enough 3.9 million rand, and the spend with BEE entities was 1.8 million, which really represents 48%. So on that particular category, we are 2% short of the designated target. Procurement of consumables, the target 25% to be spent with BEE entities. Total consumable spend is 13 million rand. There was no discretionary spend in that consumable basket. The discretionary spend, therefore, was 13 million rand. Spent with BEE entities is near enough 6.3 million rand. And the percentage spend with BEE entities was 28% versus the target of 25%. What I have done is I've just put in the slide as an extra, really. There's two particular 100% one-man or one-woman BEE, 100% companies which we are nurturing at this point in time. One is Sun Hygiene Services, owned by a black lady, where we've spent around about 15,000 rand. They supply hygiene services plus safety equipment, which we're supporting that lady. And we have another fellow running a company called Valicia Transport. This particular person transports our workers to and from work in a taxi. And we spent 66,000 rand with him last financial year. What we do for these particular BEE entities that we're nurturing is we pay them immediately on presentation of invoice, as opposed to 30 days where we pay all our other suppliers normally 30 days, and that's in order to assist them, you know, with their cash flow situation. Our transport company at this point in time actually forms an integral part of that business, and we're partnering with them in order to for our people to get to work on time, and often when they are working extraordinary hours, we rely on him to get them to and from work safely. Okay, employment equity. This table was taken directly from this mining charter reporting spreadsheet. Employment equity percentage HDSA at different levels. If I could just take the level right from the top there, the top management would include one African male who's sitting on my right-hand side here, Mr. Freddie Kenny, a coloured female who is Una Adonis, which gives us two, and then white male three, which is Robert, myself, and Twivi Bisa. In senior management, Peter Kluter, who's our quarry manager, is our one senior manager. And I could just put in a backdrop here. Petra Quarry, in our aggregate business, these, in terms of mining companies, are very small when put against the backdrop of the South African mining industry. Petra's total staff complement is 47 people, of which 39 are HDSA people. There's three white ladies in the white component as well. So it's a relatively small operation. Middle management is Emerentia Williams, is a coloured lady who looks after our regulatory environment. And we have three junior managers in the HDSA category and two white males in that category. Corn critical skills, 11 HDSA plus three white females, zero white males. That gives us a total of 14 there. Just following on from that particular slide, if I could move on to the percentages. If you look at the center of that slide, it gives you the targets for 2010 through 2014. The top management, you can see, is 40%, senior management 100%, middle management 100%, junior management 60%, and core and critical skills 100% if you consider three white females also in the in that category. HRD, human resource development, that's the money there that we've spent on number one, learnerships, artisans, apprentices, ABIT training and other training initiatives. If you look at those figures, they total up to 356,275 Rand, of which you can see that all of that spend was in the HDSA category. Just to give you a backdrop of that, total HRD expenditure 356, total annual HDSA payroll for Petra Quarry for the financial year 2012-2013 was near enough 4.2 million Rand. HRD expenditure as a percentage of HDSA payroll would have been 11.9%, and if my memory serves me correctly, I think the target is around about 4%. So we're very happy to spend that kind of money because obviously we believe that any amount of training and nurturing there actually is an advantage to our business. Okay, once again, I have mentioned this previously. Total HDSA headcount is 39 persons out of a total staff complement of 47 persons. Just giving a little bit of a background here. Learnerships in ABIT for the year. Two mechanical engineering students completed and left at the end of last year. We've got another two. So we constantly have mechanical engineering students, mainly from HDSA students, mainly from Central University of Technology at Petra Quarry at any one time doing their practical and making a contribution to that, to the quarry. Just incidentally, a quarry is a particularly desirable environment for mechanical engineering students to use practical because the spectrum of mechanical equipment in that quarry goes anything from crushers to mobile equipment to drilling and blasting to drill rigs to trucks. So a mechanical engineering student would get a particularly good grounding in terms of his vocation in that environment. We had 3 apprentices during 2012, all HDSA and ABET training. We have 7 people. There are 14 people that should be on ABET training. 7 of them have elected not to do ABET training. 7 are currently on ABET training. I have a schedule of ABET training here as to what level those people have reached. On community development, this is perhaps the one where we have some shortfalls, and the questions really posed in the mining charter are the following. Did your company consider relevant profiles of communities and identify credible leaders in this community? The answer to that is yes. Emma Williams, who's our person that deals with that, actually went to Guachabela, which is our main sending area. For Guachabela is approximately 40 to 50 kilometers outside Bloemfontein, which is our sending area. And we've identified, I personally have also been to Guachabela with World Vision to identify various projects there, and so has Emma. Did the companies consult with such leaders prior to implementation of projects? Well, the problem is we haven't implemented the project, but we have spoken to the people. And have we identified projects with needs analysis and prioritized those projects? Yes, we have. Did the company consult with a relevant municipality to determine possibility of partnerships and in respect of identified projects? Yes, we did. Okay. Has provision been made for the transfer of skills and capacity building within a relevant community? We haven't done that. Moving on to health and safety, the number of persons on the OHS representative training have been 4 done in the financial year. The training was done on the 8th of the 3rd, 2012, and is valid for 2 years, which represents 8.5% of our workforce. All our mandatory reports have been submitted, and I will just list them quickly. Annual medicals, hygiene reports, personal exposure, personal noise exposure, and thermal stress reports. Adherence to HIV, AIDS, and TB guidelines. 8 persons have been on our HIV awareness course on the 12th of the 2nd, 2013, and this represents 17% of the workforce. Our intention is to complete the rest of them as well. Health and safety audit. We have a number of health and safety initiatives that we conduct. At each operation, we conduct every year a health and safety audit run by ASPASA, which is our industry body. ASPASA is the Aggregate and Sand Producers Association in South Africa. They're a very stringent audit on health and safety and environment. This particular audit was on the 23rd of the 7th, and we achieved 85.1%, which in my view is not good enough. We'd like need to be a bit higher than that. ASPASA also conducts its audit according to the OHSAS 18001. Of 2007 standard, which is a particular quality standard in the realm of safety. It's not very visible that, but I'm sure you can see it on the handouts. Those are the categories of health and safety issues that we deal with during the audit. And you can see the graphic depiction of how we scored and also the figures on the right-hand side, just to give the members a view of how that health and safety audit works. Moving on to environmental management. I'm just going to read through here quickly. It says, assess performance towards achievement of the objectives, targets, and actions of the EMP. Is the company compliant with the requirements of the MPRDA or Regulation 55 on monitoring performance assessments and environment plan? Yes, we are, and I'm going to show in the next slide why we are. If the company received feedback from the DMR in relation to compliance, has the company acted thereon? Yes, we have. Monitor and evaluate the EMP. Are all mining activities related activities included in existing EMPs and amendments to the in terms of the MPRDA? Yes, we have. undertaken environmental compliance auditing? Has compliance audit been conducted? Yes, we have. Periodic assessment of the adequacy of financial provision? Yes, we have. I'm going to show you a copy of our financial provision in the next slide. Are all closure liability assessments done for the operations? Yes. Is the closure liability adequately funded as per prescribed method of the financial provision for the MPRDA? Yes, it is. Implementation of approved rehabilitation progress towards implementation on the rehabilitation plan and concurrent rehabilitations? Are all operations with EMP commitments towards concurrent rehabilitation up to date and with the rehabilitation process? At Petra Quarry, there's not a, because it's an open pit with relatively flat benches, there's not a lot of concurrent rehabilitation you can do at this stage. So we have done certain amount of sloping, but concurrent rehabilitation at Petra Quarry, because of the pit design, is not really all that much of an option. Progress towards the implementation of a closure plan. Have closure plans been developed, taking into consideration a sustainable closure? Yes, it has. And we've recently submitted a revised EMP around about July, August last year, which is currently under review at the DMR. That's just a copy of our guarantee for an amount of 4.18 million. It was taken out around about July, August last year for financial provision. Just on the other matter, that's the front page of our Esparza environmental audit, which is done every second year, which we achieved 83.5% for. Environmental performance assessment dated March 2012. That is the report that is sent, that is done every second year and submitted to the DMR. Every month, a company called Green Mind Environmental, every single month, Green Mind Environmental Management conducts an environmental control report for Petra Quarry. I have a copy of it here. This is a very comprehensive report, which I get a copy of, and also our managers get a report. That's a pretty comprehensive report, which we monitor every year. And this particular report, which is done every single month, was really in response to our situation that we had last year, where we realized that our environmental matters required some attention, and we're continuing with this. So this is a constant, independent update of our environmental situation at Petra Quarry, and we do this religiously every single month. Diligently. I beg your pardon, Chair. Yeah. Okay, Esparza, and as I say, Esparza audit is done every second year, and the last one was done the 26th of the 3rd. Okay, conspicuous by its absence has been in the mining charter. There's an element there for housing and accommodation. At Petra Quarry, we've never really addressed any housing and accommodation for our workers. Our workers are really close enough to the operation for them to be at home every night. So we have not done anything on housing, and it's never really been part of Petra Quarry, the housing and accommodation. Petra Quarry, as I'm sure some of you know and have been there, is in Bloemfontein itself, and there's I think sufficient accommodation to for the people at the quarry. Okay, that's I've completed my presentation. Thank you, and Chair, if I could field some questions.
Thank you, Lady Chair. My name is Freddy Gani. I'm actually the founder of Pietra, and I was a local businessman. I'm a local businessman in Bloemfontein, and for the past 31 years, and I have a company called Kenworth Pty Limited. how did Pietra, how did you start Pietra Star? I think that's a question that the committee will ask. There was a tender in a newspaper where Pietra was closed. It belongs to the council, and then the council went out on tender, and we were three tenderers. It was Tala, it was an Italian company, it was Lafarge, and it was a company, one of my companies called Kenter Developers. By that time I didn't know anything about mining. Mining was like, you know, space to me. And I filled all the necessary documents in, and here comes the time of guarantees. And I didn't have the time, the guarantees to put up there. And I met a friend of mine called Mr. Kurs Robenheimer, and I explained to him that I've got this tender and I need to work with this tender. And the same breath, I had an offer from this Tala who wants to actually buy the tender from me. And I said, no, I want to be involved in it. We talk about eight, 9 years ago now. And then what happened is that I met Mr. Oppenheimer, and we formed a joint venture, and from there on, I become part, I bought shares into the Robex Group. Robex is a listed company where I am one of the major shareholders today. We paid for our shares those years, it was 87 million rand, and I have to sell some of my businesses to pay for those shares. So today, Pietra now is part of the bigger group. Now, that's what I'm trying to allude at, where's Pietra's from. Now, Lady Chair, if I have to start now, I think this committee will never be able to stop, you know, to hear from how we went through. Understand that I didn't know anything about mining, and by that time, the DMR in Valcom didn't want to listen to me even. But I can really tell you, Mr. Lady Chair, that DNR in Valcom is really trying their level best to assist us, you know, to overcome all these hurdles, what we used to have. But we are stated to the committee that we are having working a very good relationship now. Thank you.
Any other contributions? Please check your mic. From Petra, nothing. Perhaps can I give this opportunity to DMR, because I think the last time we'd met, relations were not too good with Petra. And just to get an indication for the committee side, if there's any changes or improvements, if you want to say so. And what is the status quo presently with Petra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must say that as the DMR, we've never had relationship problems with the company. Unfortunately, when the statement was made, the department was not there to occur or to explain. Yeah, but as the department, we've never had issues. It was just a matter of, you know, making sure that there's compliance. Yes. I've seen the presentation. We still have concerns as the DMR, particularly on the, you know, SLP and mining charter issues. If you remember, Madam Chair, the last time we spoke and or met regarding the company, there were various areas where the company was not complying, and they were even served to the Section 93 order to stop them from mining until those issues were addressed. The company has to date addressed some of the areas, but not everything. The order that was served was lifted on condition that by a certain date, which was given to the company, they must have submitted and addressed all those issues, which was never done. You know, they addressed some, like I already said, and not everything, particularly the SLP. The SLP, the condition of the lifting of the order was that they must submit a revised SLP, because currently the department does not have any SLP that is acceptable, that the department can use as a yardstick to monitor compliance and progress. So there is nothing that the company has submitted in to the department at all. So they have made a presentation, but I cannot comment on it because we don't have anything in place as a department. So that is as far as, you know, we are concerned as the department. And I heard Mr. Aldrich saying that the closure liability is adequately funded, and unfortunately I have a different view, I mean, as the department. They have 4.1 million in place as their financial provisions for rehabilitation, and the latest site inspection results show that the company needs to top that amount up by 3.9 million. So we need to have in place 8 million, but we currently have 4.1 million, but it's not due at this stage. It will be due by June. So it's not adequately funded. So I differ with what they said in their presentation. But as far as the social and neighbor plan, there is nothing that the department has in place from the company. The deadline given to them was June last year, and from there, you know, there's been different, you know, meetings, engagements, and up to now there's nothing in place that we can use to monitor compliance. There is nothing that the company has done, no LED project implemented. You know, we don't know what the situation is regarding the social and labor plan. We don't know that at all, because there is no document that we have in place. Thank you.
Jemar, anything else?
Chair, I think we will take questions from members and support the statement by colleague. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, do you want to engage? You'll respond after. Any takes from the members? Honorable Schmidt? Okay, Honorable Schmidt, you can respond.
Well, the most obvious, sorry, the most obvious question would probably be from Petra's side, is there a revised SLP, or any SLP? Because, you know, that's an allegation made, and I think you should be able to refute it or agree to it. Can I just ask, as a matter of interest, I've seen your comments about housing and accommodation. Certain companies do provide for housing allowances. Now, I'm not sure whether that's come up somewhere. Has that been addressed? Has it been discussed? What's your view on it? Thank you.
Honorable Santa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think let us get this one straight. The last time when we were there, as Petra, you said to us, relations between yourselves and DMR were sour. Unfortunately, DMR was not there to refute that or to agree with you. I think we need to get that one right. You are saying now, I think, and you are saying that relations with DMR have improved. Yet DMR is saying you are still struggling on the side of compliance, because that was the critical area where relations were soured. Can you give us a straight and a definite undertaking that you and DMR are working together in addressing this, especially the SLP one? If DMR is saying you have nothing to put on the table so far as SLP is concerned, what is your take on that? If they say there's no document that would allow them to monitor your compliance, it becomes a poppy ace. So can you give us some assurances on that one? I was a bit confused. Forgive me for my ignorance on the ownership part. When you are saying 100% ownership, where is this now? Hundred percent ownership of Petra is Indalo, but 74% of Indalo crushing aggregate is owned by someone else. No, 74. Yeah, and then there's 26 Indalo crushing and aggregate is owned by that chap, I'm sure he's from India. Now, I was confused in that. I mean, I was not good in mathematics, in arithmetic. I was not good. So when I look at these figures, yes, 74 and 26 is 100, but the way you present it, that's 100% of Petra is owned by Inzalo Crushing Aggregates. Yet there is this Vishal, or Vishal, what's name, who is owning 26%. Can you put me at ease on that one? On your... Let me leave the others, I'll come back. On your mine community human development, I find it very odd when you say you are identifying leaders from the community. Why should you identify credible leaders, credible in your view? That might not be a view of that particular community. It gives me a sense that when you see a teacher walking with a tie, you will say that's a credible leader. And then you'll take him on. Can you explain to us whether you are working with the structures of those communities that you are talking about? Are those communities structured? I think I need to leave it there, Chairperson. I'll come back.
Okay, I think that's a lot of questions. I think also added to what the members have said, if you can get more details actually on your community development processes, including the budget concerned there, I think there's not much detail that gives an indication as to how best. I'm also thinking of the fact that I think that your quarry is situated in this, almost in town, in the city center.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, the related houses, are they not being affected by that mine by now, and the level of housing that's there is supposed to be high standard housing. The dust also, is there no complaints from the community there? And what are you doing in relation to sort of to correct the situation in relation to that? The other issue is okay, let's first deal with that, because we need to go. I also have a concern with the ownership pattern, where we need better detail in terms of the percentages that have been divided. Because now there's another story where Mr. Kenny has been telling us about where, how it started, and now you don't know who's owning what out of the 100%, and that is also not indicated in the ownership pattern that you've given. The other issue is, okay, SLP, you'll go into detail about that. Not much has been said about the SLP, and not satisfactory. I think even the last time we were in Bloemfontein, the main complaint was that DMR is not getting your reports. How has the situation since changed? Because there has been an indication that there still seems to be a problem in relation to that. Okay, let's just take that out for now. Would you like to respond to those?
Okay, if I could, just respond to the SLP and DMR issues at this point in time. In my view, there's a very healthy relationship between Petrochori and the DMR, and I'll explain why. Because we are talking to each other more now than ever before. We are, last week alone, we had a visit from the environmental contingent of the DMR in response to our submission of a revised environmental program, which was submitted around about August last year. So, if I could just go back a few steps in, after the closure, which was obviously a very unpleasant situation, okay? What we did with the DMR has asked us to submit three new documents, the EMP, the Mine Work Program, and the Social and Labour Plan. We submitted a new Mine Work Program, a new EMP, and we submitted a new Social and Labour Plan. The Social and Labour Plan was submitted by email on the 1st of the 8th, 2012, and it was posted via registered mail on the 3rd of the 8th, 2012. But let me just go back to the relationship part. In my view, in my opinion, there is no problem with the relationship with the DMR. In fact, the DMR relationship is incredibly healthy. Kalipo Kweti, the acting regional manager, well, last week...
We got it from you.
Not from me. I'm expressing an opinion.
Can you just give him a chance to explain?
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to that.
Kalipa and me are talking to one another. Kalipa is very, very... She tells me exactly what the problem is and how she wants it fixed and by when she wants it fixed, and I know exactly what to do, and there's no miscommunication or anything. The relationship to me is on an even keel. There is no problem with that relationship, but I want to put that on the table, the general manager of Romix Aggregates and a director of Petrochori. I don't have a problem at all. In fact, the DMR and their officials have been incredibly helpful to us. They've been, and the relationship is at a better point now than it ever was previously. And I need to tell you that I'm very happy about that. The fact that Kalipa Kweti is actually telling me that she's not happy with something is incredibly positive, because I know what to do because she's letting me know now. So I don't see a problem at all. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if I could just go a little bit back in history, in October 2010, we have a new order right, converted new order right, okay, which included all of the necessary documentation that was required for a new order right. After the situation that we had last year, three of the critical documents that composed that right, i.e. the EMP, the Mine Work Program, and the Social and Labour Plan, the DMR requested that we revise all three of those documents virtually, I wouldn't say from scratch, but there was a complete revision of those three documents, which we did. The EMP at the moment, I think I would be as bold as to say that we're pretty much on the point of having that EMP improved. I don't think there's too many issues with that. If there's a problem with a guarantee, we fix it. Not even a question asked. As far as I was concerned, we had a visit on the 9th of April, which was last week, and the guy said, look, we think that your guarantee is perhaps a little low, and we said, fine, well, you tell us what it is and we sort that out. To me, that's not a problem. As we stand at the moment, that guarantee, as it stands today, as far as I'm concerned, is acceptable, but I'm sure Kalipa is going to give us some written instruction that is no longer. So to me, that's something that needs to be done. It's a process. During the environmental visit that we had last week, I need to tell you that the DMR officials were extremely complimentary on our progress that we've made since last year. I'm sure that will also come through in writing, and I'm sure that they've perhaps conveyed that to you. There might be a few little issues. I don't think there's a problem at all with the Mine Work Program, but we'll still hear about that. The sticking point is actually the Social and Labour Plan, of which we have one that was 2010 in place. Obviously, those Social and Labour Plans have a life, and then a dynamic document that requires change. People come, people go. There's a whole lot of different things that need to be done on that. And the big sticking point with that Social and Labour Plan is our local economic development plan, which we've had untold difficulty in actually selecting a project which is suitable both for the local municipality, for the communities, for us, and particularly the people that we need to make happy in this situation is the DMR. The DMR needs to give their authority and their consent to that particular project, whatever that project may be. And we've had huge difficulty identifying and spending the money. I can assure you, and Freddie will back me up on that, if I had to pay that money over to whatever entity tomorrow to get that LED project completed, I would happily do that right now. But it's not as easy as that. Spending that money for us mining companies, which are small, is very difficult, and I honestly would stick to that. If I can say that, we've submitted all the other documents. It's a social and labor plan, but more particularly, the LED project of the social and labor plan, which is the difficult one. Because the social and labor plan is incomplete unless you've completed all of the necessary elements of that social and labor plan. Okay, let me move on. Recently, we've identified a school, and together with one of the ladies that is working for Kalipa, who looks after her social and labor plan, we have agreed verbally that we will take that school on and build a classroom for that school. The plans we already have in place, and we're getting a contractor now to give us prices to build that school. We want to get ahead and we want to build that classroom and we want to get it over with, because we cannot continue. That LED project is causing difficulty for us, and we want to get it out of the way, and we want to get it ticked off, and we want to get it built, and we want to take photographs of it, and we want to be a part of that community's development.
Yeah. I think the issue is there isn't a social and labor plan.
No,
is that it, DMR?
Madam Chair, the issue here is the social and labor plan that they submitted, that was considered, I don't know, we touched on the background last year when we were in Bloemfontein, on the background regarding this company. So it was extremely substandard. We could not use it at all to monitor compliance. And they were ordered to submit a revised SLP. Everything had to be revised.
Now, has that happened?
They have not submitted it. And remember, with their social and labor plan, they must submit their annual progress report as well. Annual, meaning every year, they must submit their annual progress report. They must submit their mining charter report. And with them, nothing has happened. They haven't submitted any of those. So we are not in a position to say no, they are now on the right track in terms of compliance, because there is nothing in place. Remember, if in their annual progress report, they tell us, okay, this is what we have achieved this financial year. But unfortunately, they haven't submitted anything regarding that.
Petra?
Okay. In June last year, we had to resubmit the three documents that I've mentioned, because the DMR said to us that our previous documents were not acceptable. The three documents that we did submit, and we did submit the social and labor plan, which they subsequently came back to us and said to us that it was still substandard. The two documents, let's just concentrate on the positive side of it. The EMP and the mine work program are with the DMR, and I think they're pretty much satisfied with the content of those documents at this stage. In our view, how do we report or fill in a mining charter on a document that hasn't yet been approved by the DMR? The DMR has said to us, listen, your current documents that you submitted in 2010 October are not acceptable anymore. Resubmit documents. Fine, we submitted the documents. We need to DMR to say to us, those three documents are fine, we're happy with them, then we can report on those documents. That's our view. It's not true you don't want to report it. We submitted the EMPs and we submitted the mine work programs. why would we submit those two documents and not the social and labour plan unless we were having particular difficulties getting that LED project of the social and labour plan? We did submit a social and labour plan. The DMR has subsequently come back to us and said that also is not acceptable. And the reason it's not acceptable is because of that LED project. Incidentally, a lot of the issues on the social and labour plan we are doing anyway. I'm just talking about the ones that are more manageable from our side. The training and the BEE requirements and those kind of, we're doing them anyway. But we can't report on a social and labour plan that is unacceptable. The only legal social and labour plan that currently is in place at the moment is the one submitted and converted in October 2010. If that is unacceptable, what would be the point on reporting on it? You know?
You're making it sound like it's your choice to submit or not to submit.
No,
no,
it's
no,
not.
No, not
that.
I think
that, sorry, can I come in? Can we hear what Honorable Solder has to say first?
Chairperson, as you have said, it's not either or. It's a question of complying with the requirements from the department. When they served you with Section 93, it was on the basis that you were not compliant. And because you promised them that you were going to comply, and your compliance is based on the yardstick that they need to use to monitor you, that is the yardstick that you are not giving them. If you are not giving them, you still argue about giving them that yardstick. What are we here for? I become confused because there's nothing that we can talk about now. If the yardstick that the DMR is asking for, you still struggle 6 months down the line, I think it's a year, down the line, you still struggle to give them a revised SLP. What's the difficulty? Can you tell us what's the difficulty so that we can talk to them for you?
Honourable Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that there was one SLP submitted on the 1st of August by email and the 3rd of August. I also followed that on October you were informed that it was not acceptable. I think, you know, we come in from the cold. What happened since October? Has there been discussions with the Department of Mineral Resources? Is it only the LED? What has taken place? Because somewhere, you know, we're trying to follow a timeline and we're trying to follow a sequence of events. I happened until October, and then from there it becomes blurry, because what more in particular is the issue with LED? Because then we can understand, is there an issue with the LED? Why is it not acceptable, DMR? Or why is the contract proposal not acceptable? Thank you.
Has the DMR responded from the October report? The report that's indicated that it was submitted sometime in October. Or was it August? Did you say August 2012?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding of the opening remarks of the regional manager is that she had an engagement with the company last week. And she has instructed the company of her level of discomfort around the issues of the social and labor plan. And she has given them 21 days from the date over which they met to submit a revised social and labor plan. Is that my correct understanding? Yes. So
now in April?
Yes. So based on that understanding, I am led to believe that administrative law requires that we give the company the 21 days that they were given by the regional manager, and should they fail to comply with what the regional manager gave them, it is then that the department must take action at that point in time. I think this may bring clarity into the issue of correspondence and communication. Thank you.
Then there's no point in that.
Then the matter resolves itself.
Because there's no, the 21 days is not even over
yet. Quite right. There's nothing to debate.
But yeah, the other thing is that now, I'm just starting to wonder if from DMR side, your time frames that you set for these reports, are they reasonable time frames? And do you then, are you in a capacity to respond adequately within those time frames? Because there's no point in us sitting here with a company and saying that they are not complying when at the end of the day, while still within the relevant time frames, we are already in discussion with them, because we already wanted them when we wanted to see already last year, I think, when we couldn't last year already, sometime in December, which to us would have been 6 months down the line since we met in the Free State on oversight. And by then we would have expected that progress should have been further than this.
Thank you, Chi. I think we need to go back to the opening remarks of the regional manager, that although she gave them an instruction last week, there has been numerous engagements from the time that the members were in the quarry to the time where she issued them an instruction, and I think she's in a position to talk to the level of engagements that she has had with the company.
The reason why I had a meeting with the company last week was the department was not getting joy from the company regarding this SLP compliance. So I had to intervene as the head of the region, because the first deadline was in June last year, and then just before the due date, they made a request for an extension, which was granted to them, and then from there it was one request after the other. So my concern was, the company is mining, they are already in their third year of operation, but no SLP project has been implemented. Yes. No, I mean, everything regarding their social and labor plan is a problem, because we don't have anything in place. So it was a concern to me, because, I mean, I am supposed to regulate them, and now they are not complying. So my official who is dealing with SLP issues, you know, approached me, and, you know, she explained to me her level of discomfort, and then I had to intervene as the acting regional manager, and then I had an engagement with the company, and they verbally committed to submitting the outstanding social labor plan by the deadline that I gave them, which is the 2nd of May this year.
Yeah, and in true honesty, we can't be grinding them for that. We can't do it now, but I think safe to say, since we were there as the committee, we must acknowledge that in terms of the presentation that has been made, there is evident change that they are trying to comply and they are trying to improve their situation in as far as possible. But it will then mean that also from the committee side then, we should wait further reports from as of the 2nd of May, from your deadline date. And I think the issue also is that the relationship between DMR and this is not the only company, for example, where there's problems. The communication needs to be more consistent amongst yourselves. Compliance is an issue where it's perhaps a learning curve for some of the mining companies, and you have to be consistent also in advocacy or lessons that they need to learn, such that they become expertise in their own field in terms of the requirements of the mining charter. And I think quite honestly we are also busy revising the MPRDA and some of the sections in the MPRDA, including the mining charter itself. So we do need to be considerate, especially DMR, you do need to be considerate of the fact that if you don't continue the communication and if you don't assist each other consistently, then you are going to experience problems as well. Because if I had to be honest, I think the timing was bad for them to be here now. I think the timing wasn't correct. It wasn't fair either for us to can say that things are not happening. But in honesty, there has been improvements. Because if you remember, I think I even have the report in front of me where there was serious problems of non-communication between the local DMR and Petra Mining. and they are acknowledging that there is an improvement, and I think from your side as well. That's why I'm asking, perhaps we need to look into the fact that your reporting systems and time frames allocated to that, are they reasonable? Are they sensible, if I may say so, in terms of us calling a particular mine to come and present to us and us not being able to get the relevant? Because the issue to us now was that since last year June when we met them, there was a problem of compliance, where you yourself are saying that there's a section that you had to imply on them. And since that time in June until now, we wanted to see what are the changes to ensure that there's compliance from their side and also from the industry side, that they are able to say we can continue mining to assist to the economical status of the country. Eribo?
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a number of appreciations that we need to make. Firstly, around the effect on reporting. One is that the companies are expected to report annually as per their commitments that they made at the MIGDET level when the revised mining charter was signed with the minister. So annual reporting has to be done. But I had made a note as the company was presenting that as we report, we need to also be mindful that a report that the companies submit is a summary of commitments that the company has made. In their new mining right, be it in the EMP, SRP or mine economics commitments. And it is quite prudent that when we assess an SRP of a company, we have to dig into each and every element of a social and labor plan. Now, as you dig into each and every level of a social and labor plan, what I'm picking up from the conversation around the table is that the challenges around reporting here is around local economic development. It seems as if around employment equity, human resource development, and procurement, there has been a meeting of minds between the company and the DMR. So for me, that tells me that there is a level of communication between the department and the company, and that has improved. And the second thing that I would like to put on the table, which we are often found wanting on, is issues of administrative law. That in law, you are supposed to give a company an opportunity to rectify and to remedy. And up until such time that you have the company has failed to do anything, you then need to proceed and implement certain provisions of the law. And I think this is where the regional manager is finding herself. She has found herself in a position where there was a requirement in law for the company to report under the mining charter, and where the members of the committee has went and conducted oversight, and where she has in her own right conducted inspections and found some shortcomings. And those shortcomings should be summarized under administrative law. So all I'm pleading for is that maybe the members should allow the process of administrative law to go through, and then when we can always come back to report to the members and to the committee, and we can report on progress or lack of progress. I thank you.
Honorable Tinto.
Thank you, Chair. You know, what I also am finding difficult for us is the fact that DMR did not prepare for this meeting in time. Because national and provincial are supposed to have the same report and have the same understanding, not come and in front of us and the other one gives us a nice report and the other one gives us the correct report. I'm just assuming. So I think them also the quarry has still got time to prepare, and maybe when they come to us, maybe the their report will give the improved version of the report. So let us leave the quarry and then we can sit together and then see what next step to take after the 21 days has elapsed.
Chairperson, on the same note,
let's bank on the instruction that was given by the regional manager to the company, and not deride the company whilst they still have a leeway. I think it was 6 months was too long a period for the regional manager to panic. I think that meeting was arranged because she panicked. But you still have a leeway, therefore, that she gave you. Let us accept that and bank on it so that we can find each other on the way.
Lady Chair, if it's okay, can I go through the shareholding and the ownership? Because that seemed to be a bit of an issue.
Okay.
If
before we close this
yeah.
issue, are you going to comment on the issue, Mr. Kenny?
On the gentleman. Lady Chair, through you, I think that if you look at, I think there was a question asked from a gentleman. Yes, it is a fact. There was a communication breakdown between DMR and ourselves. And I think we need to open this thing because it appears that we are sitting here and you know talk around the table here. There was a problem between DMR run by Mr. Oberholzer, and there was a problem between Oberholzer and us, and that is where the problem has started. There was no communication. Even if we fax, we send letters, we make appointments there, we never have that opportunity to meet Mr. Oberholzer. But at the end of the day, after your intervention that time, as I said, things come right now. There is communication. We are getting things, all things okay from our side. Thank you.
Okay. Before we close up the matter, DMR.
Thank you, Chair. I think we welcome the resolution of the committee that we allow the 21 days that the regional manager has given to the company to happen, and we will definitely revert back to the committee should we be called. But I would just like to clarify one thing that we are probably speaking different languages. My opening remarks was basically meant to clarify the statements that were made by the regional manager, and I think they didn't go down quite well to the members. So I was just clarifying we are talking from the same page. We are not disagreeing on any facts. I thank you.
Okay. Would you take care of the rest of the outstanding?
I think let me just deal, yes, Lady Chair, if we can deal with the ownership, because that seems to be a bit of a, I did move through it fairly quickly. I think if we can just take one step back, Mr. Kenny did mention that he originally started with Petra. Then it was incorporated into the Robex group, which was listed. When that entity was listed, the entity had a 31% empowerment partner called Matlapeng. That Matlapeng shareholder had a 5-year lock-in period, which came to an end in February this year, February 13. And unfortunately, the once empowered, always empowered in terms of the ownership does no longer apply. So we had to look at alternatives to ensure that each of the underlying mining licenses were in their own right compliant with more than 25% ownership to a empowerment partner. And it is for that reason that within the structure of the listed entity, we put an intermediary company between the listed entity and the quarry called Inzalo Aggregates and Crushing. And that company that owns the quarry is 26% empowered, but not to a single individual or into a single company or to a single group of individuals. It is split into two trusts. It is split into an employee trust, and it is split into a social and development trust, educational trust. And we've done it specifically because we cannot afford to every 5 years give away another 26% of an entity. It needs to remain for the benefit of the greater BEE status of the of the individuals and for the social development. So that is why we've done what Harmony put in place, what the other entities have put in place on a larger scale, so that at least we know they've got the 26%. The dividend flow from Petra will go as split per shareholding. 26% goes to the trusts. The trusts are very simple. They immediately allocate within 90 days the dividend flow to the employees on the one side and to the development program as accepted by DMR as identified. And unfortunately, the trust actually says in consultation with the DMR, because at the time of lodging the trust deed, we could not identify a specific approved plan that the DMR was happy with. So the ambits of the trust on the social and development side is in consultation and in agreement with the DMR to spend that money. The money is there. It's not that we're not spending the money. It's in place. It's only held in a nominee relationship by Mr. Vishal Chagan because he was a 26% shareholder of Inzalo when we purchased Inzalo. It's not a forefront company where we split it up and whatnot. We actually acquired a company that had a 26% empowerment partner. And we have purchased that 26% to give it to the trusts. Does that clarify to a large degree? We've had to do it because Robex was empowered. They've disposed. A lot of those empowerment partners have disposed of their shares at the top, and we estimate we're only about 17 or 18% empowered at the entity level, and therefore we've dropped it down to where the quarries are to ensure that those quarries are always empowered by having 26% of each quarry held by the empowerment trusts.
Just explain, you said that you bought a company. Maybe I just misunderstood it. What do you mean by that?
Inzalo Aggregates and Crushing was a fully fledged crushing company that was owned by individuals and Mr. Chagan. And we have taken him and his expertise and his people that were in the crushing industry, and we thought it would be an ideal fit to actually use those expertise. Because it's not an entity that we've just, a shelf entity where we've just split the shareholding. It actually has got crushing expertise and it's got equipment in it, and we felt that that would be a good fit to have some sort of skill transfer as well at the same time. We're trying to develop the people and to have it all in one round basket of goods. It's not always easy, but it's better than trying to just put something in place just to make sure that you fit with your ownership.
Can I ask a lay question? Where's the plant? Where is this practical, this Vishal?
No, the plant is in Inzalo Aggregates and Crushing. And to the extent that we need to utilize that plant in the quarry or in there, that plant will go into Petra on a higher basis, or it will go into one of the other quarries on a higher basis. So we're trying to combine the true BEE business with what we've got. But the biggest the most profound flow of funds will be whatever comes out of Petra as a profit will be distributed 26% to the trusts, 74% to the holding company. 26% that goes to the trusts will go to the social development and to the empowerment employees in terms of the deed.
I don't know, but out of what you're saying now, it's giving me good reason to support what DMR was saying in terms of the social labor plan to say that they've got a problem. Because even the way you are stating it presently, it sounds like it's something that's still to happen.
No, chair lady. The trusts are in place. The trusts are here. We're waiting for the master to actually approve the trusts. The trusts have been signed. They've been delivered. They are there. The process has been put in place. Everything is there. We're waiting for the master to send the deeds back so that we can distribute the cash. That's the only issue. You can't distribute
cash to an entity that the master hasn't physically approved. That's our only dilemma at this stage.
Out of this 26%, you've got these two trusts.
Yes.
One you say is the employees, and the other is the education trust. Who are the board of trustees?
The board of trustees is made up of three separate individuals, one representing the quarry company, Romix Aggregates. The other trustee is a non-executive development trustee who we've identified as Mr. Kao Msamang, who has various representations on various of our boards within the group and is involved in SPH Kundalile, Burma, Plant Hire, a number of the entities. And he's our development director. And then we have one representative which has a legal background. And the trust is split on the basis of it must always have a non-executive development trustee, it must have a representative of the actual aggregate company, and it must have a legal representative so that at least legally we know that the funds are always going to be channeled in terms of the deed and not siphoned elsewhere.
Who represents the employees?
In the employee trust, they need to form a committee. There's a cooperation agreement that will be put in place per quarry, and the cooperation agreement will have a committee of employees who will negotiate with the trustees in order to make sure that the determination of the dividends as determined in the trust deed is not unfair. And it's a very simple process. Every employee is graded, and depending on your grade, you get a certain allocation of points, and the dividend is split by the total division of the points to the employees.
Honourable Schmidt?
Yes, Madam Chair. A trustee is normally divided between beneficiaries, the workers, and the trustees who do the administrative and the decision-making on behalf of the beneficiaries. That is to understand the process, so understand the model which you're working from. I'm not quite sure. You know, if normally what happens is a company takes, let's say, in order to be to empower itself, takes 26% of its shareholding, and it then forms a separate entity, or it gets a separate group of individuals, or it allocates 3% or 6% of its shareholding to, let's say, an employee share ownership program. I'm back to the buying of the company. You see, that's what I'm not trying to understand. What did you buy? I mean, did you buy your BE? That's basically what I'm asking. That's why the board issue is the issue I don't understand.
Lady Chair, if I can clarify that. The Romix Aggregates paid Mr. Chagan for his 26% share, and that payment is an interest-free loan to the two trusts so that they will have the 26% of Petra Quarry. It's an interest-free loan to the entity. SARS is happy with that because it's a channel of being able to get them the shares into where they need to be. We have also not gone down the road of allocating the shares to the employees, because we've seen, Lady Chair, over the last 5 to 7 years, that in itself has created huge, huge problems. The shares remain in the trust, and the benefit of the shares, the dividend flow, goes to the individuals. Because we've seen in the historical stuff where if you try to allocate the actual shares down, you land up with exactly the same problem that Robix found itself in now 5 years down the line. The employees move on, they take the shares with, and eventually you dilute it back to where you don't have your actual empowerment. So what we've looked at is we've looked at a process where the shares will always be housed in the employee trust and in the development trust. And the flow of what those shares will deliver will go to the employees and will go to the social plan or the development plan that is accepted. that it is a continuous process. It cannot be a once-off, because there again we will fail in terms of trying to make sure that the empowerment stays in place.
Is that the document that you have in relation to the two trusts? I think we need copies of that, and we'll need to look into it before we can...
Lady Chair, that's no problem. If it's okay with you, I'll scan them in and I'll send them electronically so that it can be circulated, if that will be in order.
I think, any comments, any additions?
The gentleman has asked about the beneficiaries, and the other gentleman has asked about how do we appoint leaders in our communities, and who are we to come and appoint leaders? How do you know communities? My understanding is that the beneficiaries, you can only identify them through the council. The council will come to us and say, these are the beneficiaries, or this is the project we have to do. And from there on, the council must be actually the beneficiary who's presenting the beneficiaries. But if we go out there and say, we are going to appoint Tabiso or Fondamerva, whoever it is, I think you'll ask us, you know, what about, if come our way, we could have said, there's a 3 million rand, do as you wish, but I think the DMR will come to us and say to us, listen, how could you just give Pete Pompey's a 3 million rand check and just walk away and say that's a social realization plan? That we have to work with council. And, Lady Chair, it's very difficult to come to that one to identify. The council must take a decision and tell us, we are saying these are the beneficiaries of that area, of that ward, wherever it is, for that year. Thank you.
Honourable Larimer?
Sorry, just to clarify, you're saying the council? You're talking about the council, the Metro Council?
Yes, the Metro Council in our area where we are operating this quarry from.
What's the DMR's feeling on that as a way of identifying beneficiaries, putting it in the hands of the local council?
Can't respond. It's fine. Okay. Because the dream has taken over.
Okay. I think, Chairperson, it is important to know that as a regulator, we cannot play referee and player at the same time. And what I mean by that is that we are not, and we are wary of putting ourselves in a position of getting into the detail of who a beneficiary becomes or who a shareholder in a transaction becomes. We can come in on an advisory level, but we are not in a position to dictate to a company who should become a beneficiary and who should become a shareholder. What guides us normally in traditional communities is the traditional legislations that are in place. We would appreciate generally that in an area where there is maybe a CPA, a traditional authority, we would always understand that legislation that runs around the communal property associations and the traditional leaderships would say to us, there is an inkosi in this area, and the inkosi should probably hold the shares on behalf of his community, and whilst he holds the shares on behalf of his community, he becomes accountable to the members of the traditional authority. You know, so we are very wary to get involved into saying the Boneng Kambule must be a beneficiary and this is how you should decide on your trust. We come in on an advisory level and we're guided by government legislation, and we tend to depend more on the Department of Land Affairs when it comes to issues like that.
I'm not sure if I fully understand. So in this case, is there a traditional structure which is a beneficiary which has been nominated?
Repeat the question again.
I'm just from what the DMR is saying. Is in this case there a traditional authority that has been empowered? There isn't.
No, not at all, because we are in a...
That quarry, sorry to interfere a second, that quarry is in the city centre.
I understand that, that's why I was a little confused.
So there's no issue of traditional leaders there and all
yeah.
that. It's partly perhaps, I think, why they're also experiencing problems in terms of their community development projects, because where it's located, is a very rich area. People around there are well off. And the people who are employed in that quarry are people who go home by taxi, for example. They go home by it's not a needy, like our normal mine areas would be needy areas in terms of housing, development, infrastructure, and things like that.
Okay, I understand. So just to recap and go back a little bit, so that the position at the moment is the beneficiaries of this trust are chosen by the elected, the ruling party in the council, in the local council. So that's the position, effectively.
We are proposing that
I don't get that. I don't get that. You're saying the ruling party in which then...
We've just been told that the council, the local council, gets to decide who are the beneficiaries of this trust. Correct?
No, but remember that whoever is the beneficiary of that trust, it's up to the company to run that.
Well, they seem to have abrogated that power to the council.
Or a non-ruling party.
So could you clarify for us then, please, what is the role of the council?
We are saying we are proposing because we can't find any people around the quarry, you know, because those people around the quarry are very rich people. And people who are working there are from Botshabelo. And we can't go into Botshabelo and say, we identify you and you and you to be a beneficiary here. And you could say, you'll get a guy from DA, and a guy from ANC, and a guy from that. We don't know. We don't want to be in that. We want to see to it that here we've got to say 3 million rand, and we want to donate it to a school. But we can't just go to a school and just donate to a school. We need the council, because the council, our understanding, the council is a body that represents all the communities in that area, not only one community.
But I also think it's a bit out of order the way you're putting it also, Honorable Lorima. Why would you now come in specifically be channel it to a particular...
Let me explain. I'm concerned that there is a local political structure which has the authority, or is going to be given the authority, to dispense benefits.
I didn't hear that.
That's what I heard.
No, I didn't understand it that way at all. I think I've been very subjective.
But then what is the role of the council, please?
Can you just say, Honorable Schmidt, what were you going to say? I don't think that should be an issue of discussion even. I think that the way you're putting the question and the statement itself, you need to restate it. It's being very subjective. Honorable Schmidt?
Can I just ask, you're the legal advisor, raise one issue. As I understand, just for interest sake, you shouldn't approach, or a company couldn't approach the traditional chief. He has to approach the traditional council. So if there's any misunderstanding, exactly for the purposes, I think, which Mr. Lorim is concerned about, because then he becomes the individual to dispense wealth, and how it's dispensed is done to the council. But if I understand correctly, the council is involved, and that's where the problems come, as we experienced in the Eastern Cape. The council have IDPs, what do you call it, development programs, integrated development programs. And the task of council is to indicate the IDPs in terms of which companies must contribute for their social and labor plans, LEDs and stuff. That's how I understand the role of the council. So it is so that if you have a council official which is partisan to a certain political party, you might be able to sway it one way or the other. I think, but it's not a regulatory collapse. It's a functional executive misappropriation of discretion. That's how I understand it. So the IDP, and that's where the problem comes in on a general level, where the companies do not get feedback from councils, and I think that's what we found in Eastern Cape, where the response time by council is so slow that DMR is applying pressure on the councils, either say, I'm not in control of the school, because if you want to spend money at the school, we don't control schools, you've got to go to the Department of National Education or Provincial Education. So you find yourself running in circles, as I understand, between the IDP, of which council is sometimes saying the money you intend investing is not into the tens of millions of rand, therefore go away. You're trying to build a classroom at a school. council says, I can't help you. Provincial council government probably says, I can't help you. Go speak to national government. So it's the sum total of the concerns which I understood. We saw a bit at the Eastern Cape and somewhere else where it's not a concerted effort by government as such assisting companies to fulfill its LED and its social labour plan. That's what I understand the problem to be in general.
But then I think we would be unfair to the company itself, because initially they did indicate to us that they actually have a problem of not knowing how best to spend their money on the project said.
Exactly. Well, the problem. I've just tried to understand my understanding as to what the problems are. I might be wrong in their particular instance,
It's fine though, you've put it on the bridge, but what I'm trying to say is it's unfair of us now to undercome and grind them on how the money is spent or where the money goes to, when they are actually indicating that they are having a problem of not knowing where do they send the money to. And you, in essence, any mine in any municipality must have a working relationship with the local municipality there. And in this case, it happens to be a metro within the city. Even the location of the mine where it is, it's well developed. The schools are practically private schools in that area, if we had to say so. So in identifying a school and an amount of budget that has to be worked out, it's actually going to be homework on their side to decide how best can we then spend that money, because in terms of DMR, it's a commitment that they have to make, and they have to spend that money somehow.
Yeah,
so I think in a way, I can understand their position, because in terms of the IDP, that is why, if you remember, I think in previous meetings we had actually mentioned that I think it's going to become a necessity for us as well, when we do our oversight, that it becomes a necessity that we go into municipalities, because we normally just end up in mines. And the setup in Bloemfontein, the Free State Quarry, this Petra Quarry, as compared to the Eastern Cape situation, Eastern Cape is surrounded by traditional leaders. It's farm areas, it's rural areas. There's ample space of where they can operate in and meet community development commitments. But in this instance, which is in a way an unusual instance, it's very abnormally situated where that quarry is.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to clarify that I have every sympathy for the position the company finds itself in, and I think they've raised a very interesting issue. Who gets the power to decide who are the beneficiaries of these schemes? Now, if it is a local council, that comes with problems associated with it, and I think this whole issue is something we should look at. I think it's immensely problematic. And I sympathise with the position the company finds itself in.
Are you saying you sympathise with where they found the quarry? Ribo, and then Honourable Schmidt.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I appreciate the conversation around the table, and maybe I want to make a proposal, and it's a proposal that I can also share with my colleague regional manager here, is that whilst in the mining charter we need to cater for our host communities, we also are required to cater for our labor sending areas, you know. And from what I'm picking up around the conversation around the table is that where the quarry is located, there is no actual need to develop, you know. But we do have a labor sending area, which is correctly pointed out as Botshabelo. And maybe we need to go back and do our homework and look at what are the needs in Botshabelo, what are the IDPs in Botshabelo saying, and what can we do to develop the area, the labor sending areas. And maybe Petra can be one of the classical cases, classical mining cases, you know, that start developing their labor sending areas before looking at their host communities. Thank you.
Honourable Schmidt?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think that's quite right. I think the MPRDA is to be amended soon to say it doesn't only do the labor, the area in which the mining community, the mine is located, but also the labor sending area. So I think it's heading in that direction. The other thing which you touched on is very, very valid. That is, if we want to criticize mining companies, I'm talking in general, not only in this particular instance, it would be very good to determine if we go to a mine in a particular district or metro or whatever, to try and establish who is the individual or company or not company, department dealing with the approval of those IDPs. Because then we can gauge whether the mining company A is giving us a runaround, or B, whether the council is not getting its act together, C, what the DMR's point of view is in that particular municipality. Because
in my view, it differs from municipal area to municipal area. In one instance, you'd have a very energetic, clued up official who assists DMR and assists the companies. The other one, she just says, go away, I don't want to hear about your problem. So I think if we want to have a total picture, as when we go to the Eastern Cape, for instance, go speak to the official in that council who is responsible for allocating, let's say, or the department allocating IDPs to a mining company to fulfill its LED in compliance with the social labor plan. But that's a very valid point. Thank you.
Anyway, I think we've exhausted Petra, honestly. And having taken note of some areas, I think there's also a learning curve for us in terms of relating our work to our oversight work with the review of the MPRDA. But needless to say that Petra would still have to continue the relationship with DMR, and we still need to hear of progress from after the 2nd of May, like you are expected to have your social labor plan. I mean, you can even ask DMR itself to actually recommend where projects can be directed to, where there's a need in the precinct, because it doesn't necessarily have to be within the precincts of where the mine is. But Tabelo is there, it's a needy place. There's other local areas there around the within the province or around the metro that might need better help. The farm schools, there's a lot of problems around farm schools. Water issues, if we're to be honest. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a school. And the other thing is that normally you find that in as much as mining, the mining companies want to assist in these projects or be involved in these projects, you can't avoid the fact that government normally has its own contributions. The departments contribute their own monies when it comes to developing schools, to building clinics, infrastructure and so on, roads and so on. But if there's a relationship within the council, it should be a relationship that is in relation to developing undeveloped areas within a particular council, rather than saying it's a relationship where money is being given to a particular council or party or whatever the case might be. But I think it's an area we also need to look into in terms of the amendment of the MPRDA going forward. In that note, having taken note also of, I've taken note of this, I'm going to keep this for further discussions if needed be within the committee. Would you like to have a concluding statement?
Lady Chair, if I may just have one concluding statement is, it is extremely difficult for us as company to identify the correct projects. I take, for example, an entity that we're involved with in Natal, where we were also really asked to please, from a development point of view, make a contribution. We could not get the local community to agree what to do. We eventually built a computer classroom. We fitted it. We put the computers in everything. We actually got a demand from the Department of Education to say, why did you build that classroom? You had no right. So just in closing statement, we're finding huge challenges. Thank you.
In those words, I think Petra has covered us. We wanted you here. We struggled a bit to get you here, but you eventually came here. There's still problems and challenges, but I think you're working more smoothly now. Do you agree?
Yes.
We'll then wait for a report from DMR. DMR will report back to the committee in terms of whatever's outstanding. And you owe us a document in relation to the trust documents, just for us to understand the construction of this trust. But I need to mention that it's very important to note that you've mentioned an employee trust, and very often in companies, it's just a fair thing. It's just mentioned. But you find that it doesn't become reality where people actually come to a point, the employees in particular, come to a point of being shareholders, of sharing dividends, and whatever other case may be. So do take note that we do follow that up, and we'd like to see an improvement in relation to that. And representatives from the employee sector, directly from the employees, must be visible in terms of your structuring those trustees, including the board members, for that matter. Board members must have representatives from employees, because very often employees, when you get to the mining company, you find that they don't even know what's going on in relation to them being shareholders or even being part of those board of trustees, or even getting any money or dividends, for that matter, from a mining company. In those words, I think let's take a tea break, and then after that we come into money market.
Money line.
Money line. Oh, money market. Money line. thank you.
Chair, I just want to say after the concluding remarks of the gentleman, I think this slide is misleading us. So they must take note of this slide because it's totally misleading. Yes. Or to another company. Oh, okay.
Anyway, money market, money light. Is this the mind that was in French? Is that
no,
the mind?
No, it's not.
That you're going to deal with now? Oh my goodness, you must change face, you mustn't smile.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And ask me about it.
They must just talk through the presentation. These are annexes. The 80 pages are annexes.
No,
you know what you want to do?